This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. Keep you in the loop in all things hoops. That's the NBA for us. And this is going to be your co-host, Andrew Reich. I'm joined by my co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing, Adam?
I am doing great. I can't believe we're on episode 12. We blew through those six previews, and all of a sudden, we just kept going.
Yeah, we almost have a regular audience, it seems like. I don't know if I've gotten a whole two listener mails, so I think... I think we're it's like almost like cable access, almost like Wayne's World, where we have like a whole three people listening and watching us.
That is honestly two more than I expected. I expected no one to hear it. There'd be like five downloads, and the fact that anybody would want to listen to this is just, you know, amazing.
I don't even think my family knows this exists. So that does just gives you the sample size of the audience, but I'm so glad for all the people that are listening to the podcast and have been listening to the regular episodes. We thank you for listening in the past, and we thank you for joining us again for this episode. This would be episode 12, like Adam just said, and we're gonna do for this one a regular season catch up for a November to remember. So for all our wrestling fans, there's a nice little shout out for you. November is the start of the NBA regular season, and I don't know, this has been a regular season that has started out kind of a little bit, would you call it eventful?
No, it has been eventful. Everything sort of happened the way we sort of did. It's just this year there were just crazy overreactions, like the first day. Oh, Cleveland's over. Oh, this is the world's falling.
It's the like, Thunder are dead. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just things are starting to shake out now that we're 15, 16 games into the season. Teams are sort of getting their rotations down, figuring out what they can and can't do, and you know, now it's starting to get good. Once we start hitting December, the real season starts, starting with Christmas. And
yeah, I've always felt like Christmas is like the real beginning of the season, because you get to the new year, football's almost over, and the NBA sort of takes a center stage as a primary sport to watch on a national scale. And also, the regular season games, they're not the most important games in January, let's be honest, but it starts to get up in importance. Like games become more significant as you get closer and closer to the All-Star break. And then in the All-Star break, you really got to start finishing strong. But you're right. A lot of the storylines that have been surrounding the NBA regular season so far have been, I guess you could call them false starts, where some people watch a team, and if they're struggling like Cleveland did, they say, oh no, they're in trouble. Or, you know, the fact that Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were out for the first month of the season and the Thunder struggled.
Sacramento was like 5-1 to start off with.
Yeah, they still have a winning record, but they're kind of petered back to the middle.
Yeah, they're falling back to earth. And it's just the overreactions. It's just, you know, okay, it's November, these games don't matter, but you don't want to start yourself in a hole like Oklahoma City to get the bounce back. It's better to be, you know, somebody like Milwaukee, who's having a golden era right now.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks already since we did our overreaction podcast a few weeks ago. But if you want to listen back, there's actually a few of these storylines that we're talking about now that we actually delved into. But here's one that I would not consider too much of an overreaction, because it's become probably the primary issue in the NBA so far, and that's the curious case of Derrick Rose. Now, Derrick Rose came back in the regular season ready to go. He promised he was going to be able to play to start the season, and he did. Second or third game of the season, though, he got an ankle injury against Cleveland in the United Center. He sat out a couple of games. Then he injured his other ankle, sat out. He left another game early with a hamstring problem. And now there's a lot of controversy surrounding the fact that he answered some media interviews in which he was basically being questioned about why he was sitting out so many games early in the season, and he was pretty blunt about it, saying that I don't need to play these games early in the year so I can save myself. But the problem is, he said the wrong thing, because what he said wasn't, you know, I'm trying to save myself for the end of regular season. What he said is, I want to be able to walk, you know, to my son's graduation when I grow old, which kind of irked a lot of people because it makes them feel like that Rose is never going to be that kind of player that gives 100% effort ever again.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing, is he gave that football response of, I want to be healthy when I'm old and not now. It's like, okay, we know players aren't playing their hardest at this juncture in the season, but if you're getting injured now, what does that sort of really say for you down the line? Also, he's kind of smart in that sense. If I was a Bulls fan, I want him healthy later and get all the ticky-tack injuries because he's not at 100%. You know, physical level yet. Let them all happen now.
Well, let me play devil's advocate in this place, in this case. And in this case, I would say, sure, you don't want to burn out your star player coming off of an injury. However, he's so rusty that if you never give him repetition and if you never give him continuous play, he's never going to get back to the same player he used to be.
There's the case for that, but at the same point, he wants to come back at 100% and just go from 0 to 60, you know, like a sports car, but you need to gradually build up. And the one thing about Chicago that I've noticed is they're sort of playing without him now. They're sort of developing a camaraderie with him not – they're becoming a different team already, if you've noticed.
Well, offensively, they improve vastly. Now, when you look at their numbers, you know, 101 points a game, 14th in the league, not great. But if you look at where they were last year, they were at the bottom. They were averaging less than 100 points a game, well less. So defensively, everybody knows this is about Tom Thibodeau's defenses. They are beastly. They are the kinds of defenses that suffocate you. But offensively, they've definitely gotten better. The one thing that worries me about Chicago with the new additions like Pau Gasol, Nikola Mirotic, Aaron Brooks, who's been filling in for Derrick Rose lately, is that defensively, and you and I predicted this, that defensively they were going to take a bit of a drop-off, and they have.
Yeah, they have, but here's a question for you right now. Who is Chicago's best player? Is it Noah or is it Rose?
It's Joakim Noah.
So then why is this a big story all of a sudden with Rose's injuries? He's been injured for 3 years now. It's sort of, you have to come to terms with, okay, he'll never be that top five all-time player that we sort of he gave flashes of.
But he's that's exactly. But that, sorry to cut you off, but that's exactly what it is. They want that back, and they think they can get it back. You know, they think they can get that genie out of the bottle again, and that's what they're hoping for. That they got that little bit of magic left for Derek, and that if they can get it out of him, that will be just enough oomph to get them over the hump and win the championship, you know, which, I mean, if the Bulls get to the finals, it'd be their first finals since they had Michael Jordan in 98. You know, he won league MVP. He was great, but they lost to the Heat. And the other thing, too, is if you've noticed, I know Toronto got off to a scorching start, and it's a shame what happened to DeMar DeRozan. He has some sort of a tendon tear in either his ankle or his leg. They thought at first it was a groin, but it's actually a leg tear, and he's going to be out for like indefinitely. I would assume at least a month.
I think it was 2 to 3 months. They sort of estimated.
That's a tough one. It's like a hamstring tear, basically.
Yeah, it's some really obscure injury, and
yeah, he was driving to the baseline against Dallas. He slipped, and there it went. You know, it just happens. But you know, they're at 13-3. They have the best record in the East, but we don't know what's going to happen after DeRozan's injury. Case in point, the only reason I brought that up is that the East is open. You know, Cleveland got off to a slow start. They're kind of climbing back in. The other division that we haven't talked about is the Southeast. Washington's decent. Miami is decent. There's really no team that really stands out there either. The East is ripe for the taking. And the thing is that I think they want Derek to come back now so that they can just try to surge and grab hold of the East before someone takes it from them.
But that's just sort of on the fans sort of wanting too much. Yeah, right now, it sounds like we're dangerously close to a Grant Hill situation where he's going to be out for another 3 years with injuries till he starts getting healthy again towards the end of his career, and he's a completely different player.
Yeah, and we were Orlando was constantly in, okay, wait and see, wait and see. And they waited and saw, and nothing came.
And so it's like, are you going to try to rush him back too quickly from all these injuries? Okay, you have a hamstring. Look, take a day or two. Take a game or two off. You're winning anyways. If you're sort of in, you know, Oklahoma City's case where you're we're in the bottom of the league and we're god-awful on offense and defense and the team just looks bad, yeah, I might start worrying. But right now you're, you know, they're, I believe, 10-6 or something around that area.
Yeah, they're first in the Central right now.
So why are we complaining? What are you going to – oh, so you're going to – you want to be 13-3 like the Raptors, like you said? Is that what you want? You want to be number one at the end of November?
Well, that's what the Pacers did last year, remember? The Pacers got off to a scorching start.
They got off to a huge start, and then just they couldn't handle it.
And by March, they petered. And yep. I guess the hope is in hindsight or in foresight that they can – that in March, Derrick Rose will kind of be back to full health or feeling good, get enough repetition in there, and he doesn't have to play as many games. I did find his comments to be a little bit deceptive. I don't think he should have said them, but I think he was just backed into a corner by that reporter and he felt like he had to say something about why he's missing so much time because he was sort of pressured to doing so, and he said the wrong thing. It's something that every player is thinking about saying, you know, like Dwayne Wade. Everyone knew Dwayne Wade was missing games early in the year because they're saving him for the playoffs. Everyone knew it, but you have to say that. So you have to say that there's some kind of an injury. You can't just say, you know, did not play, tired.
Well, remember, Sacramento, Tim Duncan, DNP, old.
Yeah,
DNP. You know, so everybody knows you're going to, you know, you need to, players are getting mysterious days off now more than ever.
Yeah. Oh, that's
so. But it's
where did that start, though, you think?
Was it San Antonio?
Well,
I don't remember it being.
San Antonio pulled three or four guys right before a TNT game, and Davis Stern got mad and fined.
Yeah.
But I think the first guy to really start it was Shaq, when he started just taking off the whole start of the regular season. And because he knew that by the All-Star break, if I'm back in shape, no one can stop me. But
oh, I thought you meant as a whole team.
Like,
start doing
yeah,
it.
Like
yes,
turns,
Shaq
what I mean is like trends. Yeah.
Shaq was the first one to take a day of rest here and there.
Mm-hmm. And Dwayne Wade was infamous for doing it. I haven't seen Cleveland do it yet. And Oklahoma City's was just bad luck. I mean, those guys would be playing right now had they not gotten injured. It's not one of those things where they're resting them. Durant got a legit foot fracture, and Russell Westbrook broke his wrist. You know?
Oh, they could just walk it off.
They could just walk. They're hockey players. But I think the Bulls have like eyes on the prize going towards like March and April, you know, when they have to finish strong, they have to get a good record. But you do have to worry a little bit about Rose and his numbers have. If you've watched Derrick Rose at all, Adam, do you feel like he's just not the same and that he'll never get back to that place?
He looks like a player who's at like 80% and he's sort of learning how to do everything again.
Yeah, the quickness is there though.
The quickness is there, but he doesn't want to rely on it yet. And, like, I saw the same thing with Rondo last year. It's like, okay, he's back. He can do these things, but he'll do one and then sort of be cautious for a couple minutes.
Yeah. I did see one of those plays with Rondo where he did the behind the back right to the baseline. I mean, there's those moments with Rondo, kind of like Rose, too, where it's like, oh, wow, he's got it. And then it's gone.
And then it would just be 3 minutes of him just, you know, sort of playing half-assed defense. And mm-hmm. It's like, okay, because he wants to see how his body's reacting. It's I get it. You're not there. Don't push yourself.
Yeah, these are professionals. These are millionaires, multimillionaires. And they don't have to go out there and slave themselves every single night. I mean, that's okay. I understand that. Now, if you're a player like an Aaron Brooks who's just trying to make his way, or you're Joakim Noah and you're just wired that way, I totally get that, you know. And also, I think another part of it, Adam, that I think factors in is that there is this kind of element of toughness that's driven into that Chicago team with Thibodeau running the show, and also Chicago being a hard-nosed type of city, and Derrick Rose being from there. And I think they don't like the fact that Rose just kind of simply takes days off.
Yeah, that is not the right media situation to be doing that.
No, it's a tough one. You and I are kind of cautious about it. You know, I'm a little bit more cautious than you are about Rose. I don't know if he'll ever get back to that place if he continues to just sit game after game after game and get nagging injuries. But We're going to go ahead and stay in the Central Division, but we're going to talk about a team that I had no idea we were going to be talking about this year. I didn't even think we were going to be talking about them until the All-Star break, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, you know, Steve Willie, got to give you a shout-out because that's his team. I will not call them the Milwaukee Sucks because, boom, 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 they don't suck.
It's the feel-good story of the year. I said look out for them on the previews. They could do something, and... Oh, look at that. They've decided they feel like being a team now.
Well, Larry Drew don't feel good because he got left out in the cold. He was the one who was replaced by Jason Kidd when Jason Kidd got shipped out of Brooklyn because him and the owner and Billy King, the GM, didn't get along. And so he went to Milwaukee. I was not a big fan of Jason Kidd as a head coach anyway. I didn't know what he was going to do in Milwaukee. I knew they brought in Jabari Parker, so I knew they had a lot of forwards. But I have trouble describing the way that they play. You know, you and I kind of talked about it and said that the way they should play is where they play a bunch of forwards and they just kind of run the ball. But they don't really run that fast. And defensively, they're not great. Offensively, I would say they're bad. But they're not a bad team.
They are just strange. Nobody is really, you know, okay, Brandon Knight, he's doing kind of good.
Uh-huh.
Sorry to point this out to you. The Greek Freak is being everything we thought he is. He's just filling up the stats. Parker is filling in. He's not dominating. But everybody on that team is playing. He's resurrected. Jason Kidd's resurrected the corpse of O.J. Mayo.
Yeah, he's played better. If you look at his numbers side by side, they're almost the same. But if you look at the effort he's giving, you know, we're talking about that word again, effort. I mean, Mayo looks like he's dialed in for every play.
Well, last year he just had DNP lazy for every third game, it seemed like. And now he's getting a solid 25 minutes a game. He's putting effort in, like you said. I think that's the key term. It's just effort. He wasn't injured last year, yet only played 52 games.
Mm-hmm. And they got a lot of these forwards. We talked about that already. They had John Hansen, who hasn't really played a lot for some reason. He rebounds a little bit. He blocks shots, but I don't know.
Hansen hasn't played. Chris Middleton.
Middleton's a very efficient player offensively.
Ilyasova has sort of come back and decided he feels like playing.
Yeah, his shooting
Zaza is efficient. Larry Sanders hasn't gone crazy in a bar yet, and he's putting up a fist.
The three guys that we'll never call them a big three. They're more like a Lego three. But, you and I both love Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, you and I talked about how he averaged only 20 points a game, but his numbers, if you look at him and expand them, he was playing at a pretty high level across the board, rebounds, points, and assists, and you kind of see it again. He's averaging 12 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. He's a defensive defensively, he's very effective. And Parker is probably the rookie of the year. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But he starts every game. He's a natural small forward. He definitely reminds me of Carmelo Anthony when he started with Denver.
I don't see the explosiveness that Carmelo had. Jabari just seems to be – he's not really exciting right now.
No, I don't think he has an exciting game because he likes to post up, and he's not one of those guys that crashes the basket or like a Blake Griffin type. He's a guy that goes in, he's a smooth scorer, and then he gets in and out.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I don't know. It's hard to get worked up over him for some reason.
But you're the big one, and you were the one that brought it up to is Brandon Knight. If we had a most improved player award, he'd probably win it right now. And he's had game winners, which shocked me. You know, I remember a couple of games. I can't remember the opponents, but he had at least two or three games where he went out there and made a game winning shot. He did have an infamous one where they were at the end of an overtime against, do you remember who the opponent was by any chance?
No.
They had an overtime game, and I'm going to look it up right now. It was against Brooklyn, and he had a layup to win it, and he missed the layup at the end of regulation. So they had to go to a third overtime, and Knight made the game winner there. So he's played well. He's been a clutch player. His shooting has definitely improved. He's the leading scorer on the team. And so that's a big part of it. You know, Jason Kidd's a point guard, And he's a guy that can teach a guy like Brandon Knight how to be a good point guard.
That, I think a lot of that can be attributed to Kidd. Mostly, I noticed the rebounds, because Jason Kidd was a great rebounder. All of a sudden, Brandon Knight has doubled his – he went from 3.5 to almost 5 now.
Yeah, and he's a shrimp. He's not a big guy.
Yeah, he's – no, he's 6'2", 6'3", I believe. He's not a tiny dude, but he now is getting the court vision, and he's actually learning from Jason Kidd, which we wondered if that would happen.
Mm-hmm. And, well, the thing that scared me was that when I saw Kidd with Deron Williams, I didn't feel like Deron Williams got better. Now, all of a sudden, Williams looks great in Brooklyn. Maybe the ankle surgeries that we talked about in the team previews really helped him out, and it's kind of reinvigorated him playing in a faster pace, I guess. But, you know, in Milwaukee, definitely Jason Kidd has been hands-on with Brandon Knight. You have to run the show. You have to be the man. You have to be the leader. And I think Brandon Knight finally had an opportunity to be that guy. And some people don't want that. But for him, I feel like he took it and he ran with it to start the season. Now, can he stay at that pace is the question.
That is a good question. But with Deron Williams, it's just – it could also be a case of, yo, I'm making $100 million. I'm already an all-star. What can you teach me? I'm not a rookie. Brandon Knight, oh, I'm only in the league 2 years. I sort of know how to play point guard.
I'm a restricted free agent next
year. Yeah, I kind of want to make that money. Okay, I'm going to listen to you. It could be just a different – and again, with the injuries and Deron Williams, he seems to be doing better as – sorry – again.
Well, in the point guard rankings, I slotted him very low because I did not like how he played last year. But he's definitely played a lot better under Lionel Hollins, even though the team is kind of forgettable.
Oh, the team is not doing too good.
They're in the playoffs, though. They're in the last seed for some reason.
Yeah, but, you know, but just going to Milwaukee, it's a feel-good story. Can they keep up this pace? Probably not. I don't.
But where will they stop? Like, will they have a winning record? A winning record in the East will get you in the playoffs. Like, will they get in the playoffs?
Well, we'll figure that out later, okay, if they're going to make the playoffs. But right now, I think we should just be happy that they're above 500, period, which has been years in the making.
They had 15 wins last year. They already have 10 this year. They'll probably pass that up by Christmas, which is pretty incredible. Now, how long they can keep that along, you know what? We'll just go ahead and talk about that, because that goes in line with, you know, a lot of the a category that's going to kind of cover all the bases of the NBA between Adam and I that we were talking about. Milwaukee, would you call them the biggest surprise in the NBA so far?
I believe yes. That is that I could say they are the biggest surprise. Other than if you want to go Cleveland not being undefeated, maybe. How about Memphis? Memphis might be the biggest surprise, being 14-2.
Well, Portland was the surprise last year because they were the ones that started out really strong too, and they kind of fell back to earth and wound up being a 5 seed. I kind of have the feeling that's the same thing that's going to happen with Memphis. You know what I noticed, though, Adam, is that a lot of these teams defensively are starting to buy in again. Like, I noticed that the defensive numbers – I don't want to say that the scoring is down because the scoring is about the same. It's 99.7 league average. That's only about a point less than what it was last year. But defensively, I feel like the teams are all kind of at the same mode, that they know that they have to get better. You know, San Antonio bought in, the Houston Rockets bought in, and the next team after that is Memphis. But the Memphis has always been there as a defensive stalwart.
I think teams have sort of bought into the specialist role. Like, you have your role now. You're not just all superstars who can play together. You need to do this. You're now the 3-and-D guy. You're now the rebound guy.
Yeah. You're the 3-and-D guys are huge, and they have I wouldn't call Courtney Lee a 3-and-D guy, but he's a guy that comes in, he scores, he always averages double digits in scoring, and he's not going to embarrass you on the defensive end. I think that's a big key, that they were able to plug that that shooting guard role at the starting spot without really being a gaping weakness on their lineup.
No, I'm just going back to the previews. I was like, oh, they're going to sort of miss the playoffs. They're kind of too old and bland. And to go for, you know, to be the number one team in the league right now, okay, you got me.
Well, offensively, they look a lot better, too. It seems like Gasol is getting more opportunities to be just an overall score instead of, hey, can you rebound? Hey, can you defend? Like, Marc Gasol's now at a position where he's like the legit scorer on that team. Azebo too, but I think Gasol is the main guy.
Yeah, it's Gasol's team now. You know, Randolph has sort of passed it over and now kind of deferring to him, I think. Gasol, you know, he's shooting 50% right now. 20 points a game, 8 rebounds, 3.5 assists.
Oh, by the way, he's a free agent next year.
He's a free agent, and I don't know if Memphis is going to have the money to pay him.
Well, that's the key to what their negotiations with Randolph last summer, where they were able to get him to kind of accept down. They were able to get him on a lower salary than he originally wanted. And remember, that Mike Conley contract is not the worst contract now. You know?
Nope, he is a bargain deal, but Memphis has been always known as being a cheap team, and it's 2 years till the cap goes up significantly, so...
What about Vince Carter? You think he's helped them out a bit?
I honestly do not know that answer. I don't know if... You could tell me Vince is playing 30 minutes a game, or you could tell me he's playing 5, and I'll be like, yeah, it sounds about
well,
right
for him. Well, that's the thing about Memphis. They're kind of blah. They're like... They don't have this roster. It's not even like the Knicks and the Lakers, where you look at them and you're like, look at this mess. With Memphis, it's kind of like... You know, they have this roster. You look at them, and they could have, like, a nice name in there, like a Quincy Pondexter and a Tony Allen. But when you watch them play, it's all kind of interchangeable. Like, you could tell me that Tayshaun Prince, you know, plays 40 minutes a game, and I'd believe you. Because the team, the way they flow, it's just so kind of innocuous, you know?
Yeah, they all have their... They all have their, like, yeah, I don't want to repeat myself, but they all have their role, and they're all sort of fitting into it, and they're not playing out of their comfort zone yet. Nobody has sort of pushed them around.
No, I think Jorger Jaeger, however you say his name, is the coach. I think he's just done a good job of keeping that grit and grind style in check, and also improving the offense at the same time without losing your identity. I think that's been a little bit of a problem in Chicago lately. A couple other surprises. You have any offhand?
Paul Millsap.
Oh, man.
Leading the league in steals.
As a power forward.
As a power forward. How is that possible?
Because he is, I can't even call him a stretch four. He's more like a finesse four. Like, he comes in and he doesn't, like, shoot threes like Ryan Anderson does. Even though he does take threes, everyone on that Atlanta team takes threes. But Millsap is a dude that comes in, and if you want to put him at the top of the key to go to work on a guy, he'll do it. You want him to back a guy down and draw a foul? He'll do it. You want him to shoot threes outside? He'll do it. Like, Millsap is a guy who is not afraid to change his identity for the sake of winning a game. And I think that makes him really dangerous.
I did not see that coming from him at all. I thought he has his role, he has his niche. Okay, you're the Atlanta team. All you do is start to shoot threes, but you know, he has been a pleasant surprise.
And he's covered up the fact that Horford, while back from injury, has not played great. But they haven't noticed it because Atlanta's been winning games, and not only is Millsap playing well, Jeff Teague is playing really well.
Yeah, Teague really stepped up. You know, Horford, I think they're sort of limiting him right now. Like, I've watched a few of their games, and it's like, okay, he looks like he's ready to come back, but he's sort of not pushing himself like Rose is.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Korver, still shooting threes.
That's all he does. You know, he goes off the screen, bang, boom, he's got a three.
It's just the way I look at the sort of the Atlanta line is, how much is Dennis Schroeder playing?
He's playing a lot.
That means they're doing well, because he disappears, DNPs, if the team starts losing, all of a sudden now he's getting on-the-job training.
Yeah, because you know why? It's garbage time.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So Atlanta's been doing, Damari Carroll has bounced back.
Mm-hmm.
They're a surprise team, I think, as well. I didn't think they'd get off to a fast start as they did.
They're creeping up in the Southeast. I still think you and I said the same thing in the team previews. We both think DC, the Wizards, are the best team. I don't want to call them a surprise or a disappointment. I've watched the Wizards, and I'm kind of like, you know what? That's pretty much what I thought they would be, you know?
And for the last surprise for me, I'm going to go with Sacramento, that they're not terrible. DeMarcus Cousins, still a beast, but they're playing in a system right now. And, yeah, you know, you're not going to continue. You know, you start 5-1. They've gone 4-6 since then. So they're starting to cool off, but they've shown they can be a team.
Well, Rudy Gay has played very well, and he got a contract extension. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're not nearly as, like, punishing as the $21 million that he got originally in Memphis that got traded twice. But now he's on a deal where it's for like 3 years, but it's significantly less. And he played well for FIBA, and he came in, and he's been a scorer. Like, they come in, they tell Rudy, hey, Rudy, you got to score points for us. And he's good at that. And he's been efficient at that. That's been the key for him. Boogie is on fire. I mean, he might be the best big man in the NBA alongside Anthony Davis. And I had to throw that in there. And Ramon Sessions and Darren Collison, they've done a – wait, is Ramon still there or did he leave?
Sessions – ooh, that's a very –
no, he's still there. But he's the backup to Collison. And they're true point guards. And I think that was a real – something they really, really needed. Like, before they had Tyreke Evans. Before that, they had I can't remember the other guy after that, but it was Isaiah Thomas, and he wasn't really a point guard. He was a scoring guard.
He was a scoring guard, and we discussed, you know, for a while, is how bad is Darren Collison, and he's putting up numbers.
Well, he's having a better year because he's the guy there.
Very good year.
McLemore is playing better. We predicted that.
McLemore is playing better, but him and Stauskas, same player, the same stat line, it seems.
Yeah, but they had to make a choice between, okay, are we going to play Stauskas or are we going to play McLemore? And they decided we're going to play McLemore.
And they're pretty much the same player. I haven't noticed a difference.
Yeah. Would you consider the LA Clippers a disappointment?
No, they're
off and on.
They, I think, are sort of pacing themselves. They're 11-5, so it's not like they're bad.
Well, people thought they were going to be the second best team in the West, especially after Oklahoma City suffered their injuries. So when they started to struggle and Golden State got out to the big run, then people started forgetting about the Clippers and say, hey, you're starting to lose ground here, buddy. You know, but now they're winning some games.
They're winning games, and I think that's just, you know, like we said with the last episode about this season, you're figuring out your roster, you're figuring out your weaknesses. Okay, we sort of learned their bench kind of shaky, their wing defense kind of shaky, and they're, you know, you have to now do adjustments, and that's what these first 20 games are, is figuring out your roster, what you can and can't do.
Mm-hmm. You know what I would consider a disappointment, to be honest with you? And it's a little bit of a predictable one. I would say the entire Northwest Division outside of Portland. You know, I know it's coming back to earth a little bit. The Nuggets started winning some games. Oklahoma City's going to get Westbrook back, and Durant will probably be back by Christmas time. I don't think they're going to be a losing team for very long, but, man, the Timberwolves are just awful. And the Utah Jazz's offense is better, but, I mean – being better than awful is still bad.
You know what? I like Minnesota.
I hate that team. That is a mess.
You know why? Their injuries are perhaps the best thing that could happen to all these young kids.
Yeah, you mean
Zach? Now you're getting log jams. We learned that Zach LaVine or LaVine, take your pick, he can actually play, which both of us didn't think so.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like a looter and a riot. You know, you're on this team with no direction. And
well, we knew they were going to be bad this year.
Yeah.
We knew they weren't going to do it, so why not see what these kids can do? You know, you have Thaddeus Young, who's taking minutes away from other guys. All of a sudden, Kevin Martin goes out. Okay, let's see what these kids can do. Let's get Wiggins some more shots.
Rubio's injury was awful. They say his ankle is still black and blue.
Yeah, that's a tough one, but now now Minnesota has a backup point guard, mm-hmm. which they didn't have. They just had retreads. They signed a 4-year, $60 million deals all the time.
Anthony Bennett's been playing. Gorgui Dieng, we both like, and he's been playing a lot more. Mo Williams is a steady guard. It's kind of like in the same vein as Darren Collison, Sacramento. You know, they needed a guy that would just be there, be a steady guard, and he plays that role pretty well. Wiggins, the jury's still out. I don't know what he really is yet, and I think he doesn't know what he is yet.
And this is what a better way for him to find out than really no expectations. Your team is going to be bad. Injuries, now you have an excuse to be really bad. And you're still trying and you're still developing as a player. I see this as sort of a blessing in disguise for that team.
I will agree to disagree there because I feel like Flip is not really coaching the team. I feel like he's still got
He's phoned it in.
Well, he's phoned it in and that he's kind of got that GM hat still on because he's still the team president and he's kind of deferring to his assistants to kind of run the show a little bit. I don't know what – I just feel like the team has no direction offensively. You know, they're kind of on the up and up, but defensively, they're awful. They're the second worst team in the West record-wise outside of the Lakers who are just – we're not going to talk about the Lakers. This is a Laker-free podcast, people. Sorry. But the other one is the Jazz, and the Jazz is a lineup that's a little bit weird too, but they do have a direction under Quinn Snyder. Like, they were focused on trying to improve their offense, and I think they've done a good job of it, but the team is still...
The team is just hodgepodge, mishmash. They have no... There's no identity. What is Enes Kanter? Alec Burks and Trey
Alec
Burks?
Burks is a point guard. Dante Exum is a shooting guard. You know, you talked about Enes Kanter. We don't even know if he's going to be with the team next year. The only steady guys to me on that team, I guess you could say Burke. The other one is obviously Gordon Hayward, who's overpaid. And the other one is Derek Favors, the big man. But outside of that, how good are those players really, you know?
Those are your big three. Your big three are Favors, Hayward, and Burks.
Exactly.
Like, okay, I sort of get it now. With Alec Burke and Exum, you're going to have 2 6'6" point guards who can, you know, switch on any given possession.
Mm-hmm.
I see that's sort of the strategy you're going for, having two identical players who can play two positions.
Yeah, you got Rodney Hood, who's kind of like an oversized shooting guard.
Yeah,
you got Rudy Gobert, who they try to play a power forward sometimes, and he's not a power forward; he's a center. You know, it's a weird place. I saw Joe Ingles, who's from Australia. I guess he's buddy buddy with Exum. He's been playing a little bit. Trevor Booker is just there. They're not a terrible team. I saw them beat Cleveland in a game where Gordon Hayward hit the game-winning shot, but they're just kind of a forgettable team.
Yeah, there's no identity to that team.
Yeah.
It's just there's no – like the thing with them, just looking at their stats, every player has started the same game. Every, you know, four of the five have been backups for the same 17.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like, okay, we know what we're going to do this season. There's no trying to identify who we are. It's just sort of, let's put another season in.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Minnesota too, in a totally different way. The Thunder, we already talked about, we think they'll be okay. The Nuggets look like they were in some troubles, particularly the coach, Brian Shaw. And it feels like they've kind of fought their way back in thanks to, I think the main reason why is that Ty Lawson has played out of his mind.
That was the thing we had said about Denver, was they had just been riddled by injuries, and now they're starting to, you know, the first one, when they started off really bad, it was just like, what's going on up there?
Yeah, it looked like Brian Shaw. I said that, I think, in the podcast before this, I said that if they kept losing games around Christmas time, that Brian Shaw was gone.
And the team decided they feel like playing all of a sudden. Who
yeah, they
knew?
Responded. Aaron Aflalo started playing better. Fareed is Fareed. He's always going to play well. He's always going to be an energy.
He hasn't been playing that well, though. He's down all around.
Like, is he worth the that extension he got where he got into the $13 or $12 million mark? I'm not sure. You know, I'd say I don't even know what is, like, comparable to, like, a type of player now that we have all these increasing salaries in the next 2 years. So I don't even know what would be a good way of, like, a good barometer anyway, but he hasn't started out like really hot. Not like he did for the FIBA World Cup, but Lawson has been like, wow. Like, I'll watch him in some games. I remember he schooled Kirk Heinrich in a game against the Bulls on Thursday night TNT. He looks great.
Yes. He's been sort of the one. He's now become the leader of the team.
Yeah.
But just quickly, I want to backstep to Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, they'll be fine. But right now, who is to blame for that team being as bad as they are?
Well, I'll tell you.
I haven't seen one good thing from Scott Brooks coaching-wise with that team. The team has just been bad offensively, defensively, all around.
Well, how much blame goes on Ibaka for not being able to carry the team on his own? Like, for example, Dwight Howard goes down with plasma surgery on his knee. James Harden, no problem. I'll pick it up. You know, is Serge Ibaka James Harden? Absolutely not. We're comparing the two because Harden was the one who was shipped out of Oklahoma City and Ibaka got the big contract. But Ibaka's not that guy.
And who was that? Reggie Jackson? He sort of was what we thought he could be given, you know, having some minutes. And Reggie, he's been putting a lot of minutes. I don't see him going out of the game much.
No, he can't. You know, when you lose Westbrook, and they also had not only did they lose Westbrook and Durant, they had a couple of other major injuries to a point where they had to do a hardship waiver so that they can pick up some extra guys on their roster because they had so many people out on the injury list. You know, Mitch McGarry didn't play a minute yet. I think Robertson got hurt. They had a couple of other Anthony Morrow was a guy that came in late, and so they had already suffered some injuries. The only bright spots I could really say is this. Perry Jones, I thought, played okay. And it boosts their supporting cast when Durant and Westbrook come back.
I don't know. Like, I disagree here. I thought people like Jones, Jeremy Lamb, no, Stephen Adams is a center. I wouldn't say him. Okay, I'll just say Jones and Lamb. Those are the two guys who are poised to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And they both sort of didn't take it. And these are, you know, Jeremy Lamb was a lottery pick. I know Perry
Lamb
Jones.
Lamb was part of the Harden deal. And Jones, they picked with their own draft pick.
Yeah, but he fell hard. Like, he slid on draft day.
He did.
And these were two guys who were supposed to be like, oh, well, we have these guys here. We're developing them. They've done nothing. What has Scott Brooks shown me? We know his questionable coaching come playoff time.
Mm-hmm.
This was his time to be like, look, I could sort of piece things together and be good. I'm not impressed by them.
None of us are fond of Scotty Brooks, to be honest with you. But Sam Presti might have to take a bit of the blame, too, because he was the one who surrounded this team with guys like Kendrick Perkins, Steven Adams, Jeremy Lamb, Anthony Morrow. He signed away. Reggie Jackson turned out to be a decent signing or a decent draft pick, I guess. And the problem is that without Durant and Westbrook, those guys are definitely going to get exposed because you have to put them in the small forward, power forward, and point guard spot, and all of a sudden you're kind of hung out to dry. And I feel like the GM wasn't able to do what, say, R.C. Buford was able to do in San Antonio, or even what Chris Grant was able to do in Cleveland by getting, you know, some pretty decent players to surround LeBron with. I don't feel like Sam Presti's done the same for Durant and Westbrook. That is something that he might have to pay for in the years following when Durant and Westbrook become free agents and they have the option to leave. But that's like way, way, way over the – that's so far past this that we're not even going to discuss that. But the point I'm making is that – when Durant and Westbrook come back, you know, did the reserves get any better? I don't feel like they did.
Nope, and that's what you got Harden. You get rid of Harden, and that's what you – that basically says we trade Harden for all that.
This is very much like when Shaq got hurt in 03. He had the surgery, and they got a losing record, and – the Lakers had to catch up all the way until like January or February to get back to a winning record. They wound up winning 50 games anyway. So the idea that people – I saw a stat line saying, the Thunder are 4-12 with Westbrook back. They have to win this many games in order to get a spot in the playoffs because every team in the West wins at least 46 games, to which I say they probably will. Because once you put in Kevin Durant, you're probably putting the second or the best player in the league – in your team, the league MVP. Boom, there he is. And that's going to improve your team to the point of no return.
Yeah, basically, it's just, oh, they have to win this many games. Phoenix is on pace to win this much. Well, yeah, when they play Phoenix, they'll probably beat Phoenix.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Okay, you've now gained games.
Yeah, they're going to be... Well, are the Thunder going to win 40 more games in the next 50? Probably. They probably are. If you tell me that I have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook at full health, and dude, I don't know if you've watched it because he hasn't played that many games, but Russell Westbrook, my God. Like, that dude comes in and he looks like he got shot out of a cannon.
Oh, he's angry now.
Yeah. He came in with a broken wrist, and I mean, he scored like the Dickens on, I think it was the Knicks. I mean, he just killed him.
And the Knicks, as we expected, terrible.
awful. I mean, that's not even a disappointment. You know, that's like calling the freaking what's their face? Oh my God, I can't believe I'm missing out on it. The Sixers. I don't even want to remember that team. That's how
I'm giving you a pass on the Sixers for this one. I will be back to hound you on the Sixers next podcast, but this one you get a pass.
You know what? We've already delved into the disappointments and the surprises. There's a few others that, you know, we'll be talking about as the season goes along. We're going to talk about a little bit of the coaches. Do you want to talk about the new coaches or just the coaches that might be in a little bit of trouble?
I'm going to say first year coaches. Let's just check in. I'm going to start naming coaches for you.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me, you know, is it the coach's problem they're bad or good? Is it the GM? What's the issue with the team? How are they doing? We've already mentioned Quinn Snyder in Utah.
Yeah, I don't think he's done a terrible job. I feel like the offense is much improved because of him. But the problem is that the roster is so forgettable, and I don't think he's really capable of boosting that team up. So in terms of credit, I give him a lot of credit for the team in both good ways and bad.
Okay, we don't need to mention Flip Saunders and Jason Kidd because we spent a lot of time on them earlier.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can talk about the level of credit that Kidd gets, you know.
Okay.
You know, it's a bit of a schism. I don't know how much credit he really should get. But, I mean, if this team does get to playoffs, Adam, I mean, it's crazy. But as much as we hate what Jason Kidd did, he's going to get the last laugh. He's the one who's going to say, you see, I can do it. I can run a team on my own.
Well, sort of he is. He's doing this. Brooklyn's really floundering. Mm-hmm. And every day it's just sort of, you know, maybe just a change of scenery, lowered expectations.
You're a Boston Celtics fan, so you watch those teams in the Atlantic. I have yet to watch a Brooklyn Nets game. Like, what are they like?
Nothing special. It's just sort of painful to watch. They had to. I watched the 76ers game where the Philly brought it back to like within three, and then Garnett closed it out. But it was just like they're not. They like are the definition of the team of just veteran presence. Like we're not gonna start. We're in second gear right now. We'll make the playoffs. We'll slide in. That's all we care about.
Yeah. That's another one. Lionel Hollins. How much credit would you give to that team? Because they don't really play like a Lionel Hollins team.
No, they don't really play like any sort of team right now. That's the problem. The thing is, they can't do much. They have no bench. They have no moves. All you could do is hope Teletovich and Bogdanovich.
And Plumlee.
But Brooke Lopez is still healthy, which is, you know, 50-50 shot at this point. You know, Deron Williams is you know, he's back. Joe Johnson's giving what they did. The team is just sort of not pushing themselves right now.
Yeah. The other new coach in that division is Derek Fisher in New York. I don't know what that is.
I think that's just we're going to spend this year developing, letting everyone learn what the triangle is and see how that goes because they just don't have the talent. Yeah. At all.
They did beat Cleveland in LeBron's return, but I think that's the only notable thing we will ever remember about the Knicks this year, because outside of that, this season is a wash. Like,
pretty much, unless they can make some miracle trade and get rid of somebody, but this, you know, we expected them to be bad, and they're even sort of worse than we expected.
I'll throw you this one. What about David Blatt in Cleveland?
David Blatt is trying to install his system. The players are slowly buying into it. Key term is slowly. I haven't watched as much Cleveland as I probably should have, but it just looks like the players are sort of confused out there. They're sort of sloppy.
I've watched a lot of them, and I think your point there is right. They look a little sloppy. It looks like they didn't really know what kind of offense they were running in the first place, but LeBron he took a couple of games to really get going, but LeBron is such a great facilitator that the only real rough spot that was there for LeBron was trying to figure out how to facilitate without being the main ball handler, because they do a lot of plays or go through a lot of stretches where it's Kyrie Irving handling the ball instead of LeBron. The struggles there have been, obviously, Kyrie Irving sharing the ball. And also Kevin Love. I think he's a little bit out of place right now, and he's struggling to find the spots on the floor in which he's most successful, like he was in Minnesota.
Yeah, he looks like he doesn't know where he belongs in the court, and he doesn't have a position, and he's
Chris
just getting Bosch numbers.
Chris Bosh did the same thing in Miami at first. Like, he had Wade and LeBron there. It was a little bit of a logjam. And then he had to figure out what he was best for. And everyone criticized Bosch because his points per game went down, his rebounds went down. And they were saying, well, he's obviously like a third banana and he's not an all-star. And if you watch in Miami, he's the guy there. I mean, Bosch is capable of doing those things. He just didn't have to when he was in Miami with LeBron and Wade. Same thing with Kevin Love. Like, I feel like Love tries to do too much. And he gets confused. And the same thing with Irving. Irving definitely tries to do too much, you know. And LeBron finally took the reins and said, I'm going to show you how to run this team. And they went on a 3-game or 4-game winning streak.
Yeah, it's a slow learning curve. And I think Blatt is sort of taking a little more heat than he should be, or taking on more heat than he should be.
Well, it just shows how difficult the NBA is, you know. I mean, Altuve Messina took over a couple games for Popovich with the Spurs, but I mean, seriously, that team runs itself. That team is like a fucking apple. you don't need Steve Jobs to, you know, make billions of dollars at Apple. You just need to, you know, put out a new iPad. You know, that's the same thing with, like, they're the Apple of the NBA. I'm talking about the Spurs, like. They run themselves almost to a point.
Yeah, they're on autopilot right now.
But a really good autopilot.
Yeah, just moving on. We're not going to mention the Lakers. Byron Scott just collecting a paycheck right now.
Wrong with the Pistons?
Pistons, I think Van Gundy, there was an article on that this past week where he's like, look, I don't know what my team could do yet. I'm still working on lineups.
Yeah.
And Jennings was like, yeah, nobody really knows what to do yet. We don't. They're slowly buying in. And if you look at the numbers, Josh Smith has not shooting threes as much as he used to.
Yeah, he's not embarrassing himself. It's not one of those, like, go home, Josh Smith, you're drunk type of stuff. It's like, he's actually not playing terrible, you know? But the problem is the team is playing terrible.
Is playing terrible, and nobody really knows what they're doing. And Monroe has sort of dropped off, and it doesn't help. You know, your number one signing and Meeks has been out, and you know Jennings is sort of being as max as he possibly can be. He's doing decent, but it's just a lot of they're developing a new system, and I think. If you could get Josh Smith not to take all those threes already,
yeah,
that's sort of a good sign for a bad team.
Rebounding-wise, they've done okay. Obviously, Drummond, he's a machine. And then you got Greg Monroe is averaging 9.5, which is probably – I think that's close to his career high, if not better than his career high. And he's a restricted free agent anyway. I think a lot of people expected Monroe to play one of his best seasons. I just don't know if it's going to be for naught because he might just leave and then Detroit goes and finds somebody that fits that system better. Stan has never had a losing season as a head coach. I feel like he's on his way to doing that.
He's on his way, but I've noticed Stein, the team is changing, which I think that's all you could sort of hope for.
And the other one we haven't talked about, but I mean, this guy is probably the A grade on these new coaches, and that's Steve Kerr in Golden State.
Yeah.
That team is on fucking fire.
The team's on fire, but the problem is the team's on fire. What happens if one of, you know, Splash City get injured and they're on fire? That's the problem.
And look who's playing good, your buddy Maurice Spates.
That's all I could say. Even if he's playing well, the team is on fire. Eventually, you're going to cool down. And when teams start playing, and I don't know whether, you know, like we had mentioned how Toronto was off to a hot start, but their first 10 games, like, were pretty much all at home.
Yeah, they had an easy start to the schedule. You're right about that.
I don't know about Golden State's schedule, but I'm just saying, if I see Maurice Spites doing anything, I'm like, this can't last.
Well, the thing that a lot of people like about Golden State, obviously the point differential, they're just blowing teams out, you know. And the other thing is that not only with the shooting between Curry, Thompson, we didn't even talk about, you know, Harrison Barnes and Sean Williams, but also defensively, they've been very, very good.
That's the thing, is they've been good on defense, which is a vast improvement.
Well, last year they were too, and everyone said, "Oh, I know what they're going to do when Steve Kerr runs the show. They're going to abandon their defense and they're going to focus on their offense." Well, what they were able to do is improve their offense to third in the league, but the defense stayed the same, which was impressive.
Yeah, they're sort of, okay. The one thing is Andrew Bogut's due for an injury,
of course.
15 games in, I think we're ready.
Is Andre Iguodala going to be happy for the entire season as a sixth man?
His numbers are just way down, and like just watching him, he doesn't even look like he wants to shoot the ball half the time.
Yeah, he wants – well, I think that's the point.
He's just deflated.
I think Kerr wants him to be that guy off the bench that just helps people out and defends and does this and that, and he's buying in – early on, but is he going to buy in? Like,
it seems like a begrudgingly buying in. It doesn't seem like, yeah, I'm totally. I get it. Harrison Barnes is a better fit for the starting lineup,
mm-hmm. but Draymond Green too.
Iguodala should be lighting it up against the second unit, and should be. He should have Maurice Spite's numbers, and they should be reversed. And that's what I'm sort of worried. I'm like, what if Iguodala falls off?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a bench, really.
Well, my question is, what happens if Klay Thompson falls off? Because he kind of sort of is from the start. He got off scorching. He was, like, leading the league in scoring. And now he's at 21 points. And his shooting is starting to kind of go a little back downward, even though he's, like, 43% three-point shooter, which is, like, top five in the league. So to say that he's petering down is, like, a very, very minor type of petering down. It's like going from being the best ever to one of the best ever, So I don't know if he's going to be a guy that's going to slip really, really far, but I just don't know how long Klay can stay that way is my question, because that's going to be the key. It can't just be Curry. We know Curry's going to be great. But after that, can Thompson be the guy? Can Barnes be the guy who can start and be an impactful player? Can Draymond Green be able to stay as the starting power forward without getting embarrassed in the playoffs by some sort of Goliath-looking dude at center?
Well, what's going to happen when David Lee comes back?
Exactly. Like, is he going to be a bad fit? Because he might. He might be a bad fit on that team. We haven't really seen him yet. So, the coaches, have done – there's some that are a little bit sketchy. Most of them have done just okay. But the one that's done the best, obviously, is Kerr at Golden State.
Agreed.
So, yeah, and we're going to be following all of these as the season goes along. Are there any games you're looking forward to for the next month before Christmas? Is there any kind of developments that you're staring at? Well, maybe Dallas's offense being ridiculously efficient?
Which that's what we pretty much said. They're a super efficient team.
Yeah.
They're being exactly who they are right now.
Don't forget, Parsons
has fit in and nothing has changed.
Don't forget the other team that all of a sudden became offensively one of the best teams in the league, even though defensively they've fallen off a cliff, and that is your Boston Celtics.
Boston Celtics cannot close out a game. If you watch the Celtics before, like, 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, they are a good team. Afterwards, they just give up. I watched them blow that Bulls game last week. I'm looking forward to a couple Celtics games because I get to see Dallas and Washington, so I get to see Pierce and Nowitzki coming up.
Oh, cool.
Super psyched for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the team just makes an extra pass, an extra pass, an extra pass. They can't rebound for anything. It's just they're strangely offensively efficient all of a sudden.
Is it just me, because you're a lifelong Celtics fan, is it just me or does Paul Pierce just walk funny?
I don't. That's a strange question. I don't think I've ever noticed.
I had to throw you off. He always walks like a bodybuilder, like he just like had a workout, and he's got his arms stretched out. He's always got his shoulders like extended. It's always like, dude, normal people don't walk like that. But then again, these are not normal people. These are 7 foot, 6 foot Goliaths.
I'm sorry, I'm not a posture expert unlike yourself. I didn't know.
Yeah, he's got to work on matching my posture, and maybe nobody will notice anymore. Miami, the heat index is not as hot these days. They're just there. I don't know what they are. And the Charlotte Hornets, I don't know what the fuck's wrong with them.
It's basically like everyone was super high on them. Oh, this is the team. And I was like, they're really not that good. Kemba Walker hasn't stepped it up. Oh, Lance Stephenson, he's not the guy. You're not paying him to be the guy. You've got him on a bargain discount deal, and he's sort of giving you what you're paying him. PJ Harrison, I like what he's doing.
He's a good shooter.
He is, for a rookie, he is developing. He's kind of nice. As for everyone else, what are you? You're expecting, you know, one of the Zeller brothers to do anything? No.
Yeah, or Michael Kidd Gilchrist still a work. He will. I think he's going to be a work in progress until
he's going to be a Tony Allen person for his career. He's just going to be a defensive guy who will get garbage points.
Pretty much.
The team, you know, oh, we brought him in. We're now going to win it. No, he can't be the guy. If you get a guy, your team is now infinitely better, but I don't see Kemba Walker stepping up. Al Jefferson is who he is.
Yeah, do you think it was a little bit too much? I mean, the Pelicans went through this, too, when they went through their changing colors, and all of a sudden it was like, okay, Anthony Davis is great. You gotta start playing better. I feel that pressure a little bit in New Orleans now. Do you feel like the same pressure's there in Charlotte with the new digs?
Well, Charlotte had the pressure because they spent money for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time anyone took notice of them. New Orleans isn't terrible. Are they 500?
They're right below, I believe. But I mean, the problem is, if you're even at 500 in the Southwest Division, you will be last.
Yeah, you will be last. But
and most teams they very rarely have a playoff summary where all five teams from the same division make the playoffs. It's almost impossible, because that means that only three other teams out of the other two divisions make the playoffs. That almost never happens. So if you're last in your division, you will not make the playoffs, and that will get Monty fired.
But they're not like 5-10.
They're 7-8. And Anthony Davis is just like, we'll talk. I could talk a whole podcast about Anthony Davis. That's why I avoided it for Adam's sake. But Anthony Davis is incredible, and the team sucks, and the coach sucks. That's what I think it really is.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, it's tough, though. I mean, I'm looking at that division right now. San Antonio's third. You know why? Because the Rockets have played so great with Harden and Howard, and the Grizzlies won't lose any games. They're too boring to lose any games. So, you know, it's just a lot of – there's no room to move up in that division. I knew that was going to be a problem for them in the first place. We need to put them in the freaking Northwest. Maybe they'll do okay there.
Just move them to the East.
Well, we already moved them to the East. We need to move them somewhere else. What about the theory that we can move the really good teams in the West? Because I heard this on Twitter. What about we move the good teams in the West and then we put them in the East and realign things?
That is a good topic for a different day.
Okay.
I think we could get into that, but, you know, realignment, it's tricky. And as you've seen, the NHL just botches it, you know, sort of every time they've tried it. And baseball with, you know, Milwaukee's now in the West. Now let's move one team over and let's just flip-flop. And they should visit the topic of moving teams around, but...
Okay, and we're going to go on our Philly watch for everybody following. On Wednesday, they go to Minnesota. On Friday the 5th, they play Oklahoma City at the Pistons. That might be a win. Here's my question. We'll finish it. Will the win come the next time you hear us next Tuesday?
All those games are winnable. According to you, Minnesota's terrible.
They also have at Hawks and at Nets.
I say no, but that goes against my optimism role for everything else I've done. That team is just awful and should be relegated.
They might not win a game before Christmas because they have three home games in a row. One of them is Charlotte, so that could be it. And then they go on a 7-game road trip. I'd be shocked if they won any of those games. That goes into Christmas time.
Right now, we're shocked if they win any game.
I think they'll be shocked if they win a game. You know, that's how bad it is. But we're going to go ahead and finish. I hate to finish it with the Philadelphia 76ers, but I had to bring them up. So that's going to do it for this podcast. I'm glad that we were able to catch up this November to remember, at least for between the two A's here, me and Adam. Anything else to finish off with?
We have a Twitter handle up now.
Oh yeah, we got at what is it at NBA team?
P2B
at
NBA team.
Let me see. Yeah, we're gonna look at it specifically for you here. At P letter number 2B NBA team. That's on Twitter. You can ask us any questions. Follow us. We're gonna be doing all that. You can go to the Place to Be Nation website. We got all the Christmas stuff going on. Cyber Monday is just passed. If you need to get a good deal, do it on Amazon through the Place to Be Nation website. You don't even have to – I mean, you could buy a Teletubby if you fucking want. You don't need – all you need to do is just click on the Amazon link through PlaceToBeNation.com. That'll give us a little bit of a help. There's a lot of really good stuff. The 90s tournament. You could listen to all the podcasts from Main Event to Still Real to Me to Jeff Bauer to Beck Show and all these others – podcast that they have, a lot of good writing going on there. Movies of the P2B generation is one part that I've been is one that I've been a part of. That's a really, really good one. There's a lot of good stuff there at PlaceToBeNation.com, but definitely click on that Amazon link if you have to shop for something for Christmas, for sure. Do you have to get anything for Christmas, Adam?
I am actually almost done with my Christmas shopping.
We did it on actually Doorbusters started, and I'm so thankful for that. If there's anything I was thankful for on Thanksgiving, I was thankful for Doorbusters, because that means I didn't have to have my wife drag me out to Black Friday, which is like the worst thing ever.
Oh, it's just miserable. But we're getting to the end of the NBA preseason, and
yeah,
we're getting through these garbage games. Like I said, I get to see Paul Pierce as a wizard, and I get to see Dirk Nowitzki
and his ugly duck walk.
Christmas time is coming, so people are nice for, like, you know, they're not as douchey as they usually are. And basketball, we are fully entrenched. Mm-hmm. It's been fun.
We got to get this college football playoff crap out the way. We got to get this. I mean, the Saints are dead to me, so there's no NFL to speak of.
There's no hope for us Saints fans.
On behalf of another Saints fan, Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We'll see y'all later on the bounce, guys. Thanks.